This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to another episode of You Don't Know Billy Jack, a podcast series where we discuss some of the greatest matches of all time through the eyes of a non-wrestling fan. As always, my non-wrestling fan eyes belong to Jordan Darby.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
I got you this time. I asked you first.
Yes, you did. Thank you. I appreciate that. Jordan, I don't have much to say before we get into our match here today. What about you?
Oh, yeah, a couple of things. Just, you're going to have to bear with me. I'm at the very end of like a cough.
Okay.
So that's just there.
Okay.
But it's almost done. And then, you remember those, the floor punch photos with the Nazi getting,
yes.
The Nazis getting beat up?
Yes.
So I guess one of the guys who's like wielding, you know, a drum stand or whatever, he died recently.
Really?
In a fire. Like, he saved people's lives.
Really?
Like, pulling them out of an apartment, and he died.
Really?
Yeah. In L.A.
What a, like, hero.
Yeah, it was like a tragic, like, heroic death.
Really? So...
Yeah, so he... Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so for the folks at home, what we're talking about is there is a hardcore show in the 90s in the Bay Area. The bands were, it was Floor Punch, right?
Yeah, it was Floor Punch, and it was that band, Hoods didn't play. It was that,
okay.
It was that band from up there. Gosh darn. It's the name's escaping me right now. But they're like a thoroughly Sacramento, you know, Northern California band.
Like the Hoods, or
kind of like they
like E Town Concrete or something. Are, are they? I don't know if they're even
they
from California.
They like never really like got very popular or escaped like the area.
Huh? With Northside Kings, where are all those bands from? That's,
yeah, I don't know.
Wow.
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. So anyway, so there's a show, and there were some skinheads that showed up and were causing trouble, and Nazi skinheads, and the like Floor Punch and Mikey Hood from the Hoods, and you know, everyone that was there decided to take care of business and handle the situation. And there's pictures of the event, and I mean, so basically what happened is they really, really beat up the Nazis really, really good.
Yeah.
With pieces of the, you know, the famous things that Mikey Hood, as soon as a fight broke out, he started dismantling a drum kit and was handing out pieces of the drum kit to people to use as weapons. And so there's pictures of like a Nazi, like one of the skinheads standing there, and two guys with, you know, pipes or
big drum, metal rods.
Yeah, big metal rods. Swinging, mid-swing at the guy's head.
As hard as they can.
Yeah, it's like...
It's not like a little poke and scratch.
No, no.
They're swinging to, like, really, really hurt these guys.
Yeah.
And then the one picture where they've got the skinhead, he looks like he's being crucified.
Yeah.
Like, they've put his arched back over the stage.
Yeah.
And spread out his arms.
Yeah.
And they're just beating on him. And the singer of Floor Punch subsequently, everyone says, took a floor monitor speaker, a wedge speaker,
yeah,
and dropped it on the guy's head.
Yeah.
And then there's a picture of him, like, afterwards, with all these Nazis, like, huddled around this guy. He looks like he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, he's out.
He's out.
He's, like, he's asleep.
Yeah. So that's, like, a real famous piece of lore from... California, and especially the Bay Area. So.
Yeah, and like those pictures they're like National Geographic pictures.
Yeah.
Like it's like you're witnessing a, like a, You know, because a lot of hardcore pictures are usually of the band, the kind of looking cool, or, you know, something cool's happening at the show, someone's stage diving or whatever. And they're like neat pictures, and they're artistic, but this was like someone was capturing something visceral in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like it was like a primitive, like a primal.
Yeah, like a ritual.
Yeah, it was crazy. Or, yeah. And the just heat, like, you can just like feel the heat from it. Like, like I said, it's not, you know, we've all been to like, or seen scrapes and like almost fights and people swearing each other out and I'm going to get you. These guys are like going on each other.
And we've both been in situations where there's like, white power presences.
Yeah. Too. And it's like, and you can feel that.
You can feel it. Yeah. But this is like the next step beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, the one of the men holding one of the pipes, so I guess he lives, is from or whatever, LA.
Yeah.
And I think he was a bouncer at like the Echo or one of those places. Like there was an article about him being a fixture in the scene in like Silver Lake, Echo Park, or whatever. And anyway, there was there was an apartment fire.
Wow.
And he like pulled two or three, he like went back in and like pulled two or three people out.
Yeah.
And the whole thing like went up in flames. Anyway, he passed away.
That's really sad.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't mean to laugh at that. That's too bad. We should also tell people that you will be eating some food during our episode, and you make no apologies about that.
Well, no, I do apologize, but I had some extra bucks, so I got some Pringles, sour cream, and onions in the grab-and-go container, and then I have an A&W root beer.
Very nice.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, Jordan, let's get into the matchup today. This is from April 2nd, 1989. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, once again, versus Ric Flair. This is a 2 out of 3 falls match for the NWA World title. And this takes place in the NWA/WCW promotion. The event is called Clash of the Champions 6, Ragin' Cajun. And so Ricky the Dragon Steamboat no longer in the WWF. Now he's in the WCW or NWA.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
And so this is 2 years later.
Okay.
But, you know, still a very different feel and presentation.
Now, Ric Flair, I have heard of.
Okay, yeah, and if you notice, his name is spelled wrong on the flashing lights right there.
Oh, is it just the C?
Yeah,
dude.
And so that is classic WCW production
dude.
Mistakes there. The company's famous for that kind of thing.
crazy.
All throughout their history. And so this takes place at the Superdome.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, though, there's only 4,000 people there. In like a 70,000
seat
venue. So that's that is something just to keep in mind when watching this match.
Yeah, for sure.
This is not a pay-per-view big event. They would do these things called a Clash of the Champions.
Okay.
And it was on TBS. You know.
Yeah.
So it was on free TV. So they would offer like these super cards. Pay-per-view quality shows, but on free TV. And that was kind of... okay, so here we go. Here's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat now.
Dude. And his name is really, like, small and cut off.
Yeah. And so, production-wise...
This looks really sketchy.
Dude. Yeah. Because the last match we watched was... Steamboat and Savage from WrestleMania 3. So going from that to this.
Yeah.
And so he has his child and wife with him.
Is that really his family?
Yeah. Whereas Ric Flair, when he came out, you notice he had several different women escorting him.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's cool. He's just coming out with his family.
Big heel move, in my opinion.
I love it.
Yeah, I know. That's something you would do.
Yeah, totally.
But you are a heel, as we know.
I guess I am.
But
are there levels of heel?
Sure.
I wonder, like, what specific type of heel I'd be.
Yeah. Monster heel.
I would take that as a compliment.
Okay. No, I don't think it would be a monster heel. There, we know a couple of them in our group, but and so he, you'll notice that Ricky Steamboat, he is the champion at this point.
Yeah.
So
when you say like world heavyweight championship, that's not like a, there's no trademark on that. Like every promotion can say that.
Well, they can. Well, okay, so we've talked about the NWA before.
Yes.
as an existing governing body.
Yes,
they held what was considered to be the one world heavyweight championship. And
okay.
So you had, like, the WWF Championship. The AWA also made a World Heavyweight Championship as well. But you know, it was largely agreed upon that this was the, you know, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, that was the World Heavyweight Championship.
Okay.
And it was, how it used to be was the champion would tour around the world. So he would go to... Japan and Europe and Hawaii and, you know, everywhere.
Sure.
And defend it.
Got it. Okay.
And so on commentary, you have Terry Funk. Does that name mean anything to you? Terry Funk?
That sounds familiar.
He's... So that...
Yeah,
that's,
okay.
That's
he looks
him.
Familiar. Who is that guy?
So he's a wrestler.
Okay.
He's also done a lot of acting.
Yeah, he looks really familiar.
Like, he was in Roadhouse.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
Yes, it is.
You know they remade that?
What?
There's like a remade Roadhouse from a year or two ago. Kind of recently.
Is Zac Efron in it?
Dude, he probably is. Then you'll see it.
Then I'll see it.
It doesn't matter what it is. You will see it.
I will see any movie that Zac Efron is in. Yes, absolutely. Without question.
Like, if they did a, like, Passion of the Christ and it was Zac Efron, like, would you see that? Would you be like...
with Zac Efron as Jesus?
As Jesus Christ.
Roided out.
I mean, he'd have to
Zac Efron? Yeah.
He'd have to put on some.
Yeah, I'd be there opening night.
You would, huh? Yeah. No joke. You would be there.
Yeah, I would.
Like, even if it was, like, non-ironic, like, gritty and, like, violent. And
yeah.
You'd see it.
I would. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Now, that's a thought. Man, oh, man. So... Terry Funk, he's on commentary now. Can you hear the commentary okay? Should we turn it up a little bit?
That's reasonable.
Okay. Maybe I will just sneak a little up.
So that, why are they brooding right now? They're just like standing there.
Okay. So
that was the longest fight I've ever seen in our time.
Yeah. So these two have feuded on and off so this is 1989. They feuded in like 1977, 78.
Whoa, crazy.
84 a little bit, 89.
So it's kind of a cross generational almost. Yeah, like it's spanned a lot of time.
Yeah, they had a match or a few matches in 1994. And they've wrestled each other, I don't even know how many times. I mean, tons of times. Mm-hmm. They would do house shows together.
Okay.
So currently this feud, Ricky Steamboat came back into this company earlier in the year, and they had a title match. Ric Flair was the champion, and Ricky Steamboat won.
Okay.
This is a rematch.
No, he wants his belt back.
Yeah. And so the thing about Ric Flair is that he was essentially the champion throughout the entire 80s. I mean, really starting in 1983. And he would lose it for a month or so here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty much he's been the guy.
Okay.
For the NWA and for Jim Crockett Promotions /WCW. And so, his whole character is based on having the title.
Being a perennial champion.
Yeah, being the man.
Yeah.
To be the man, you got to beat the man. That's like a line of his.
Okay.
So, they have, at this point, these two have so much personal history together. There's the mini feud that they're currently involved in over the title, but then there's all this past history as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ric Flair looks quite old.
Yeah, so
he's in his
40s at this point.
Okay. So older, but not like he's not old.
Yeah, he's in his 40s, but he's been going hard, like living a hard life and wrestling hard for 15 years at this point.
And he's the one that. Does he have a daughter that wrestles now that we saw?
Yeah, you've seen her. Charlotte,
she's like big.
Charlotte Flair, yeah. She's big. Yeah. And so.
So now they're cooking. Now they're going.
Yeah. And. So this, something. I want to know, like, just initial thoughts on just we're a few minutes in. The style that they're wrestling compared to what we saw Steamboat do in the Savage match.
Yeah.
Are you feeling any differences here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this looks a little more in line with maybe some of the other matches we've seen where there's a little bit more of a free form to it.
Yeah. So you're getting a sense of that?
Definitely, yeah. And that's part of why I think there's some of these draws. Like, they're kind of just... They're kind of doing some standoffs.
Yeah.
So it feels to me like they're trying to find a rhythm. Now they're, like, going.
Yeah. Yeah, and so... I'll say that... I mean, because, obviously if we're watching this match, you know that it's considered to be one of the best matches of all time. Mm-hmm. So Ric Flair, in 1989, he has a feud with Ricky Steamboat. They have three matches that are televised. There's another one that's filmed at a house show. So it's like a, I think it's a fan cam one.
Okay.
Just someone filmed it, you know?
What's a house show?
So that's a non-televised show that they do. And that's what it used to be, the business used to be based on, was you would have TV shows that were largely what are called squash matches, where it's featured guys against what are called, you know the term jobber?
You know you've that term? Used it extensively, but I don't know what it means.
Yeah, so it's a wrestler that, you know, maybe they don't. So you're seeing
now the chops. Now they're going, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's chopping on his neck.
So a jobber is like a real low level wrestler whose only goal is to lose a match, make the other guy look good, and to lose a match.
You'd be a jobber.
Yes, I would.
Right?
Yes.
And just that, be like super hamming it up.
Listen, I would be a jobber. I am a jobber. That's my role in life.
To lose? No, that's not true.
Doing jobs left and right.
You would be brother. A great jobber.
Yeah.
No ego.
No. So anyway, so they would have these jobber. Largely, the television was based on jobber matches. So real quick, short matches just to show the featured guys.
Okay.
And then they would do promos, the interviews. You know.
Yeah.
So like, the kind of the featured show of this company was called World Championship Wrestling for a long time. And so it was a little TV studio with like maybe 100 fans there, and they would do interviews and jobber matches, and that was it.
Okay.
And that's like my favorite thing. I love that. All I care about watching are that's not true, but I love jobber matches and promos.
Yeah.
I love the feeling of it. But so anyways, they would do that. That's
pretty surreal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of surrealism there, I bet.
Yes. Absolutely. And then every now and then you'd get like a featured match.
Okay.
But you would have these promos and these feuds going on, and they would use the television to sell the feuds for the house shows.
Got it. Okay.
And so they would do a big show, you know, at a big arena, and then they would do smaller shows around their territory. Mm-hmm. And it was based on, you know, watching the TV and seeing these feuds and these storylines develop, and then their goal is to sell tickets to the live events.
Right.
And that all changed with the advent of, I mean, essentially Vince McMahon changed that and started...
As technology moved.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. And technology moved.
He saw how he could exploit that.
Yeah, and as TV changed and like the way TV business was done, he started paying paying TV stations rather than like using like a barter system of like ad space and all that. You know what I mean? So it became harder to get TVs, but to get TV spots. But anyways, that changed to where, you know, over the course of time, network TV developed, and it really changed. Do you know what the Monday Night Wars are? Does that sound familiar to you? Mm-hmm. So you know what? So the Attitude Era.
Yeah. You've
heard that before.
Is that The Rock and those guys?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So WCW and WWF both had competing live wrestling shows. So they would want to have more featured matches to get better ratings and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, WCW, they were doing that in the early 90s. They were, you know, starting to have more featured matches and trying to get better TV ratings and all that. So that it's not entirely true that the Monday Night Wars, you know, changed that completely.
Yeah. But
they would have less jobber matches and more featured matches, you know, in the 90s, early 90s too.
Yeah.
But, I don't even remember... What was your question? what were we talking about there?
Well,
I don't even remember.
We were talking about Ric Flair's role in the company.
Okay, yeah.
And And then you kind of started to talk about the nature of this promotion.
Yeah.
And then I asked you like what a house show was.
Oh, okay.
When you were kind of like
So we were talking about Ric Flair in 1989. That's what we were talking about. So they have three televised matches. They had one before this. Then they have this match, and then they have one after it. After that match, Terry Funk, who's on commentary, he gets involved, and they have a feud.
Oh, okay.
With two matches. All of those matches, there's an argument to be made that they're like the best matches of all time.
Hmm.
And Ric Flair had them all in the same, you know, the same year, back to back to back to back to back.
So he was like on fire.
On fire. Just incredible.
And do you like him?
Ric Flair?
Well, those matches.
Love. Yeah, I love them all. Yeah, and there's like the trilogy, it's called. These three matches with Ricky Steamboat. There's people.
Dude, what the heck?
So that's what you call the Flair flop. And that was like the thing that he would do.
The Flair flop?
Is he would walk and then just fall straight on his face.
Yeah, he really does live up to his name. He's got a lot of dramatic flair, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's arguments that could be made for each one of these three matches.
Okay.
As the best one, you know? Okay. And everyone has them in different rankings and all that.
Sure.
You
had to make kind of a judgment call.
Yeah, I think this one, like, more than the other. Yeah, it was just kind of a judgment call. Like, I think most people would consider this to be the best of the three, but arguments could be made for all of them. Now, what have been your impressions so far? Have I been talking too much? Have you not been able to focus?
No, it does feel like there's a good deal of familiarity between these two.
Okay.
And it feels a little more dynamic than the last match.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot more ebb and flow on this one.
Yeah.
The crowd is, like, it's kind of like what we talked about last time. It's weird because the crowd is much smaller, so it gives it much more of an intense and, like, hectic feel.
Yeah.
Because you can, like, hear individual voices people, and, like, they're freaking out and... It feels really hectic.
Yeah.
And it looks like kind of ramshackle.
Yeah. And like you'll see there's like a step ladder.
Yeah.
Just right there for no reason, you know. That's like, that would never happen in WWF. Or when they were walking to the ring, you could see that there was like there was some kind of tape.
Yeah, just like duct tape
on the floor.
And like,
yeah.
Like can lights, like kind of just
there. That's like you would never see that in WWF.
Huh. Yeah, it's weird because like the wrestling quality feels equivalent to what we've seen, but like the atmosphere just feels really amateurish.
Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Why does he keep, like, begging him?
Well, that...
There have been several instances where he's, like...
Begging off, it's called.
Is it like, wait, give me a minute, or is it just like, don't hurt me anymore, you've been hurting me too much? Or...
Yeah, so have you noticed what happens after he does that each time?
He'll creep on him and give him a good one.
Yeah, so that's...
So is that a heel move?
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's really, like, dishonest.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and it's like, that can be used as a way to, like, get the crowd to purely as a way to get the crowd to react to them, boo them and cheer the, and make the good guy look good. Because, you know, this good guy, he's beaten the bad guy. He's like, taken him by surprise and beaten him. And so he's afraid now, and so he shows his character that way. Or, really, the way Flair does it, if you watch, is he uses it as to fake them out and to lure them in. You know,
yeah,
he'll always get something on him, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's what, yeah, I've noticed.
Yeah. And so that, I mean, so you're able to tell pretty clearly the dynamic, good guy versus bad guy.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty clear.
Yeah. And so as far as the pace of the match, do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, just that it, like I said, I feel like it's a little more up and down. It's a little more like, it's a little more dynamic than the last one, for sure.
Yeah.
The last one, they kind of just went.
Yeah.
And then there was a moment where the good guy was down.
Yeah.
But then, and then he rose and like did his thing. But this is kind of a good back and forth.
Do you, if you were to compare it, like how would you compare it to that Nick Bockwinkel, Kurt Hennig match that we watched in terms of the pace? Can you remember at this point or not really?
I don't. Yeah.
If not, that's okay.
Yeah, that's hard for me to remember at this point. Yeah, to be honest, I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Like the pacing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's been like pretty consistent good energy though.
Yeah.
Even in the down times or whatever.
Yeah. And so look at the, this is a little bit of a leading question, I guess, but have you noticed a difference in the pinfall attempt, and when they pin them, the attempts between this match and the WrestleMania match that we watched?
Just that these seem like more earnest.
Yeah.
The other ones, it was real kind of phoned in.
Yeah.
They were boom. Yeah, I pinned you and then you're up and then boom, you pin me and I'm up.
So that,
because this is a like a best out of something.
Yeah, 2 out of 3 falls match. Yeah, and so that's something that I really love about this match is that because a lot of times pinning attempts are used as like a little break, and none of them are. Like they're working during the pin attempts, which is to me like really crazy.
You want to see that.
Yeah, and that's not something that you see very often.
Yeah.
Yeah, so see, like, there was a lot of pinning attempts in that past minute or so. And they were all very hard fought.
Yeah, they seem a little more actual.
Yeah.
The other one, they were kind of, it was more just like a routine exchange.
Right, yeah. Like a, yeah.
Like a volley.
Compulsory. Yeah.
Yeah, like. Are there any, like, illegal moves?
Yeah. So,
Because, like, he kicked the guy. I don't even remember who did it to who, but the commentator was like, that's a legal kick.
Yeah,
but how obviously that's arbitrary, but like
right, yeah.
So he just pinned him.
Yeah, Ric Flair got the first pinfall. Yeah. And so that's
Nature Boy.
The Nature Boy, Jordan.
Okay.
So 19 minutes in.
Okay.
First fall. Yeah. So like you said. What's considered illegal and what they'll get disqualified for is completely arbitrary almost, but low blow or poke to the eye or in this company being thrown over the top rope deliberately or something that's like not hardly ever enforced is kicking with the flat of your boot versus the point.
Oh my gosh.
Or using a closed fist.
Mm.
But again, that's like, so you'll see like a chop.
Yeah.
Or sometimes an elbow or a forearm. They'll hit each other with their forearms. Yeah.
The Steamboat guy has been doing a lot of the chops.
A lot of the chops, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so theoretically, you're not supposed to use your closed fists.
Okay.
But again,
I understand, like, it's largely going to be arbitrary, but
yeah,
it's kind of interesting to hear the commentary in that way.
Yeah. So, okay. So, any thoughts about the commentary?
No, it's just been, like, even. I don't know. That stuck out to me.
Yeah.
They've just been adding to me appropriate color. I mean, they're talking about the moves they're doing and how the thing's going, but
yeah,
I haven't heard. I don't know though. We've also been talking.
Yeah, do you want me to turn it up a little bit, or
maybe like a little bit?
Yeah, let's do that. That is kind of a concession that that we're making with this format that we're doing is like. There's a lot of audible noise, so... Oh, well. I'm fine with that.
The crunching of Pringles?
Yeah. And so we're in the second fall now. And what's cool is that all of the NWA title matches used to be 2 out of 3 falls.
Oh, okay.
And they went away from that. This company did in particular. But they're kind of doing it again, so it's like a kind of a throwback... Old school style,
okay.
Match at least in terms of the stipulations.
Are there any like feuds that these guys get involved in, and they actually hate each other in real life? Like, I can't stand that guy. Like,
Are you talking these two in particular, or
not
anyone?
Necessarily, like any of these more legendary feuds where it's like. Like you said, at this point, these guys have been kind of feuding in the wrestling world for over a decade.
Yeah.
And then they would continue on.
Uh-huh.
Does it ever happen in these guys' professional life where, like, personally, they actually do hate that guy?
Yeah.
Like, I can't stand that guy.
Yeah. I think probably the most famous one, Bret Hart, you know that name?
Yeah, yeah.
Shawn Michaels, does that name
sound
familiar? So they, you know, feuded on and off for several years in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And they legitimately hated each other.
Like, how does that work? Like, they just have to be professional and...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you have to really be in tune with the other guy.
Yeah, yeah. Like
to make this thing work.
Yeah, and there is an element of, like... We're both trying to make money.
Yeah.
And even if I don't want you to make money,
yeah,
I have to make you look good,
right,
and work with you so I can make more money.
Yeah, that's kind of got to be an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, but you know, famously, a Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels match. It's known as. It's known as the Montreal screw job. Really quick, you see that Steamboat has Flair in a hold?
Yes.
That's called the figure four leg lock.
Okay.
That's Ric Flair's signature hold. Steamboat put it on him first.
Okay. Got it.
The Montreal screw job, which is Bret Hart was the champion in 1997. And was having
what company is this?
WWF.
Okay.
Was having contract disputes and decided he was going to leave the company, but didn't want to lose the match on pay-per-view in Montreal. And they went back and forth, and it was to Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
That's who he was wrestling. And they went back and forth and trying to figure something out. And at the end of the day, what happened was they legitimately... changed the finish without him knowing it and screwed him or double crossed him out of the title.
Crazy.
Yeah. And so it's, I mean, even that is in debate with some people.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, like, how do you know?
We don't.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's very possible that it was all a work, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I think it's entirely possible.
The double life here and what these guys do, you know, in the theater of it is the most fascinating, like, part to me.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to hear how they really feel and if we can even tell if that's real.
Yeah.
And how they can even tell what's real after a certain point.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
such an all-consuming lifestyle, it seems like.
Yeah, and I mean that's like a big thing with like Hulk Hogan, for instance.
Yeah,
where does Hulk Hogan stop and the real person begin at this point?
Yeah, right.
And you've been doing that for 30, 40 years. I mean, yeah. Ric Flair is kind of the same way, although I think it's a little easier to tell that line, but. You know, you can hear, or it's just you've been doing that and developing this persona for decades. How hard is it to turn that on and off?
Yeah.
At what point do you just become that? You know.
That was why that trial was interesting with Hogan.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And then having to establish that.
Yeah. But it's like, I don't know. It happens in hardcore.
Sure,
too,
yeah.
In music, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
That's like kind of the line. This is something I talked to John about a lot, especially in the past, is like you kind of have your, like, if you're in a band and you're performing, you know, you have your persona, whether you want to or not, like,
yeah,
no
definitely.
Matter how real you're trying to be.
Yeah,
and it's
definitely.
Like at a certain point you kind of realize you're at a crossroads where it's like you kind of have to go all in on it or get out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So they've gotten really physical in the last like 10 minutes.
Yeah, for the second fall.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Like the physical exertion's like pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I'd have to think they're feeling it by now.
Yeah. And so one thing about these guys is that, you know, they've wrestled, you know, countless times at this point.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were 60-minute draws or 90-minute draws.
Okay. So they've gone the distance on each other.
Yeah. And, like, they famously have, you know, incredible stamina.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell, for sure.
Yeah. And, like, Ric Flair... He would try to one thing he was like kind of famous for was he would try to wear guys out, you know, like legitimately.
Yeah, yeah.
He would try to. It's called like blowing them up,
uh-huh.
like where they're get
yeah.
winded, you know.
Yeah.
So he would try to do that, and like, you know, he never could with Steamboat.
Yeah. I mean, Ric Flair really looks like a workhorse.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just kind of been going.
Yeah.
They both have.
Yeah, I mean, Ric Flair, like I said, he's been going nonstop for... He got in a plane crash and broke his back in, like, 1975.
Dang.
But he recovered from it, and, you know, since, like, 1977 till this point... He's been going nonstop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
And a lot of that as the world champion. And, like, yeah, he's legendary for partying.
Big surprise.
Yeah. But, yeah, he's, like... He would, like, drink and party till...
Just live all hard.
Yeah, till, like, 4 in the morning. Go to sleep at 5, wake up at 6, go to the gym, get on a plane, like, you know, get to the arena, maybe sleep for a little bit, work 60 minutes,
so
go do it again.
Sickening.
It's crazy that he's still alive.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I think that often about these people that we're watching.
Yeah.
You've pointed out the ones that have passed away. But
yeah,
it says something for this culture that I'm more surprised than not when you're like, oh yeah, that guy's still alive.
Yeah,
and they're not that they're not today, like, they're not that old.
No,
you know what I mean? Like,
no.
So it's like, it's not like this was at the turn of the century, and it's like, well, yeah, they're dead.
Yeah. Yeah, because you see the pinfall attempts here that are kind of the same thing that we've seen. And real aggressive.
Yeah,
and
really
hard
aggressive.
Hardworking.
The whole match has been pretty, like, hard worked, it feels like.
Yeah.
I feel like their bodies have been pretty tense, like, the entire time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there are those weird moments kind of in the beginning of, like these bullish, like, stare downs.
Yeah.
But it's kind of been tense the entire time.
Yeah. So, like Ric Flair being alive and Hulk Hogan being alive, those are two, like, for everyone that's died so young. And actually, Terry Funk, he's still alive as well. And that's really crazy because Terry Funk, you know, he'll go wild too. So these guys. Ric Flair is largely considered to be the best wrestler of all time.
Okay.
Ricky Steamboat, one of the best. Probably a level or so lower.
You know?
But, yeah, Ric Flair is by a lot of people, considered to be one of the best. Terry Funk as well.
Okay.
He's like, one of the absolute, like, very top guys.
So, if Terry Funk is, like, one of the best, the average guy hasn't heard of him.
Right.
Like, is he able to live, like, comfortably right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Because I don't think Terry Funk was real, I don't know, but I think he was relatively careful with his money. And, like, he went hard and partied and everything, too, but not like Ric Flair, for instance, who always has money troubles.
Yeah.
Ric Flair. Like, Ric Flair's fine enough.
Yeah.
He's not, like...
But he should be wealthy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and he probably is in some capacity.
Well.
But,
what were they chanting?
I have no idea. I missed. I was talking.
that's okay. They'll probably do it again. But
yeah, it could have just
like
been
a
for
a three-syllable chant. Like,
It could have been like for probably like for Steamboat or
or
something. So what have you been noticing about the action here?
They're getting a little more like epic, I think.
Uh huh.
With it, like, now he's pulling his shorts down and like hitting him.
Uh huh.
But that was kind of a crazy move they did off the pole.
Superplex, that's called.
Superplex. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah.
And now he's holding him up in this crazy hold.
Chicken wing. A double chicken wing.
And he, Ric Flair, like, what did he do? Like,
he submitted.
Submitted to that?
Yeah. And that's not something really that you see very
often. Yeah, yeah, I'd say.
Yeah. So you see, like, how dark the, you know, that Pontiac Silverdome was, like, lit up. You knew exactly how many people were there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
For sure. Okay, so now they're tied, right?
Yes.
So he did the fall.
Yeah.
Why does he do that?
It's just like a signature thing that he'll do. Like,
it's so funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. And he does it for decades.
What a character.
Yeah. And I mean, and as you can imagine, his interviews are
ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, he's considered to be, like, the best of all time.
Yeah.
Interviewer, you know?
Like, do you think that where does like Macho Man fall, like, as far as an interview, like, of all time?
One of the top ones.
Yeah, he's pretty superb.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, He's insane.
He's insane. Yeah, like he's better than Hogan.
Yeah.
And like he's got these like iconic, like he said, history beckons the Macho Man.
Right.
Something like that. So that's like an iconic thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. And he's got a lot of real famous interviews and promos.
excuse me. Why is he called the Steamboat?
Steamboat?
Or Steamboat.
Well, that's his last name that he uses.
Oh, okay. There's no reason.
No.
No rhyme or reason.
No. Yeah, I don't know why he... Like, his real name is Richard Blood.
Yeah, that's a crazy name.
Yeah. But, you know... Steam... I don't know why he used Steamboat. And he's only ever a good guy.
I mean, he's got what you'd call a baby face.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He's, like, really friendly looking.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got like a good body.
Yeah, yeah.
He's handsome.
Yeah.
Yeah, a nice face, like a friendly face.
Dude, now the ref is getting into it with Ric Flair. Dude, that's so funny that they spelled his name wrong.
Yeah.
Dude, that's really good.
It's very good. I mean, the list of little mistakes like that, just so many stupid little things.
Yeah,
it's legendary.
That would just be like funny to be that guy and you're in your like mid late 40s or whatever and you're walking out and there's not that many people there and it's like you look up and the name's spelled wrong.
You're like, okay,
come on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
They kind of really go at it with the hits, completely contrary to the last match.
Yes. Yeah. And you just saw him throw a punch.
Yeah.
How did that look to you?
That was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the chops look real to me.
Yeah, I mean, the chops are real.
Like, he's going pretty hard on him.
Yeah. And there's matches like Ric Flair will have with guys where they'll be chopping each other and their chests bleed.
Crazy.
And that's like real, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's cooperative, but it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that like that always gets like a big reaction out of me is like when they chop each other hard enough that they bleed.
Yeah. Dude, he is really ridiculous. Now he's doing the begging.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. He got him.
Dude, then he got him. I feel like this ref has been like pretty important.
Uh-huh.
Because that last, I don't know any of this technicality, but like the Steamboat really threw Ric Flair into that pole.
Yeah.
Upside down.
Yeah.
And that looked pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
And the ref like got involved and it looked like kind of like to give him a breather or whatever.
Yeah.
Because he looked like he was laid out a little bit.
Yeah. That's like a signature Ric Flair thing that he'll do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that could have been.
I mean, yeah. So, that's what I'm saying. That's probably a testament to his skill.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
As a performer. But, like, it just looked like the ref's been good at, like, keeping the pace.
Yeah.
And he'll get involved at these times where it's, like, it seems like it's needed. Because they're going pretty hard.
Yeah.
So this is a timed situation as well?
It's a 60-minute time limit match.
60-minute time limit.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's referee Tommy Young. He's a real famous referee in that era.
Do you like him?
Yeah, I like him fine. He does get pretty involved, though.
Yeah, I don't know if that's good or bad. I've just noticed he's been, like, important to this story, whether he should be or not.
Like, him and Flair, they always have, you know, incidents.
Yeah.
And Tommy Young, he really likes to take the big bumps.
Do you like an invisible ref?
Yeah,
I think so. We've talked about it a little bit before, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Like, there's... Right now, there's a real famous referee in New Japan Pro Wrestling called Red Shoes. And he's really, really dramatic.
Dude,
and
yes.
So it's like... I don't know. It depends on the match, I guess. But... So, sometimes it's real funny, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, Will...
So this is his move?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, the figure
that's
four.
The same that the other guy did to him.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it just depends on the match. Because there are times when, like, they'll do stuff that's really either important or really funny, you know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And it really adds a lot, so...
I think I kind of like all the auxiliary elements like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the wives and the...
Yeah, just everything.
I don't know. It's kind of... It makes it a little more surrealistic.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's part of why it's so good, right?
Yeah.
Like, and they have to treat that like a serious...
And they have to
event.
Act like a... Exactly, yeah. Exactly. How does a wrestler develop a signature move?
Well...
Like, oh, that's his move.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays, it's their training and they say, okay, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
But, so like, there's the idea of, like, you have to display that move as important. Which is kind of interesting because Ric Flair... He only really ever beat, like, low-level guys with that move.
Huh.
Like, he'll never really beat a, like, Ricky Steamboat, for instance. Or in any big challenge, big title match or something, he's not winning with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, he'll...
Whereas, like, another guy might have some kind of pile driver or something that, like, wins the match,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Especially like in WWF back then. And now everyone has their finishing move,
okay.
You know? But it was less so in this company. But like WWF, like, you know, the big leg drop from Hulk Hogan or the elbow drop from the Macho Man.
Yeah.
That's their finishing move and that's how they win every match, you know? But like, you know, maybe Ric Flair, maybe to show how devastating that move will be, maybe he'll break someone's leg with it.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, in like a, after the match, they'll get in a fight or something, you know? Or he'll beat all the lower level guys with it. And so that's how they, you know, that makes it more important.
I mean, he was... Excuse me. His usage of it in this match was pretty effective.
Yeah.
Because it came at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And, I don't know if it's something that you've noticed throughout these matches, but the wrestlers... when they get like moves done to a certain part of their body,
uh-huh.
How they then react and use that.
Definitely, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like, remember Fujinami in the New Japan match? They were hurting his
hand. They were kept going on it. Yeah, yeah.
And definitely. So he couldn't use that very much.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is the third fall. Have you seen a difference between any like the falls or like the level of intensity or
I
just
like
the shifts in momentum?
Yeah,
or
no, it feels appropriate. Like it feels like there's now they're kind of at the like giving all aspect of it.
Yeah.
they're both like pretty taxed, but I mean they kept the energy going, like,
yeah,
the entire time. That second fall was pretty intense.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
The, I don't energy know. Wise, and
I don't know if you noticed at one point, Ricky Steamboat did the 16 elbow drops to. Did you miss that? He did a bunch of elbow drops to Ric Flair's leg.
Oh, okay.
Did you miss that?
I must have. It doesn't stick out to me.
Yeah, I meant to point that out. But, like, I was probably distracting you.
Oh, no. It's hard for me to catch sometimes, too. You have to remember, sometimes if they're doing something that's to you quite obvious, like something like that.
Yeah.
I might not really regard that.
Right, yeah.
Even if he's going on him, like,
yeah,
over and over. I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
it depends.
I'll try to be better about pointing that stuff out. It's like a line that I'm trying to watch between, yeah, like, I don't want to point out really obvious things that make a match.
Definitely.
You know, really good. But like,
yeah,
I want to give you a little bit to...
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to tell me, but it feels like you've done a pretty good job at walking that line, because you're looking for, like, what is going to stick out.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, there's just some stuff that it might appear quite obvious to, like, real wrestling fans.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So he's got a sleeper hold on him?
Yeah. And so he's going down now.
Steamboat's slowly going down. So he's doing like an arm drop to see if he's,
yeah,
awake.
Yeah. And especially in WWF, a real, real common trope is that someone will be in a sleeper hold. They'll do one, two, and they drop it down, like, and then they come. Yeah,
dude, that's so cool.
It's like a classic Hulk Hogan thing.
That sounds like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes I really do enjoy it when it's really cheesy.
I mean, I do too. Yeah, it's great.
I'm kind of two minds. Like, it makes it that much more, like, ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that's not always a bad thing.
Yeah. So have you noticed the use of the ring versus them being outside the ring?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like it's been pretty measured. Like, they're not living out there, but it's been effective.
Yeah.
They really do seem to know each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, again, with how many matches they've done, it's like... And there's been interviews where they'll say, yeah, they don't even, you know, they don't even talk.
Yeah, yeah. They're just feeling it.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's a little dig at the WWF. Yeah,
totally.
There. So do you have any, we've been watching this for 50 minutes now. Does it feel pretty long?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like surprisingly, it doesn't feel close to an hour like it is.
Like compared to the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's something that Terry Funk at one point points out. He says, boy, you know, it feels like they've only been in there for 5 minutes. Or
right,
something.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they've really kept the pace going.
Yeah. Did you see Steamboat? He was begging off now, too.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you know this.
Yeah. But a heel doesn't acknowledge that.
A lot of times not. Yeah. But I mean, what that does do is it conveys the intensity of what's being done to him.
Yeah. So now he like can't walk on the leg, basically.
Yeah. And still, and you can hear the slap, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, they're still very hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say.
Terry Funk is really good when he becomes involved.
Uh-huh.
At one point, he puts a plastic bag over Ric Flair's head and tries to smother him.
These things are sketchy.
Yeah. But they got in, like, big trouble for that, like, with the TV network, you know? Yeah, you see the rope
through that foot out there.
Yeah. And yeah, so you mentioned earlier that it was feeling more like epic.
Yeah.
Do you get that sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Did you feel that in that Nick Bockwinkel match? Like, did that have that same epic feeling or not?
It did. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
If you notice, Ric Flair never lands on his back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
I've noticed
he lands
that.
On his side. That's because of the plane crash.
Dude, the chicken wing.
But look at that.
Oh. So wait, what happened? He had him in the chicken wing. But then he got him onto the ground.
His leg gave out.
Oh, uh-huh.
Ric Flair, he fell down. Ric Flair's shoulders were on the ground. Ric Flair's foot was on the rope.
Right.
But the ref didn't see it.
And are the announcers legitimately confused, or are they, like, aware of everything?
That's a good question. It could be both. I would say they would probably... Well, you know, I don't know at this point, actually.
Huh.
I don't know. Like, it could be where they are legitimately confused, or, you know, they know enough to know that, okay, there's some kind of... Something's not quite right.
Yeah.
And they're not sure where they're going. We got the replay now.
for the leg buckles of anybody.
And so what the ref is seeing is...
Yeah,
is the Ric Flair shoulders on the ground.
But he doesn't see the kicked out.
Yeah. And we'll fade it out from there. So what happens then is that they use... they go back to the videotape and they see that there's... that there are grounds for another match.
Okay.
So they say, oh, you know, it wasn't quite a definitive win, so they have another match.
Oh, okay.
So, we'll turn this off just so as to not... And that's where they talk about that.
Okay.
You know, we don't need to see that.
Hello, everyone. Drew here to let everyone know what's going on the PTBN feeds. On the Pop feed, in the latest episode of Talkin' Pop, Jenny and Tim interview each other and share summer memories in the rare guestless episode. In the 7th installment of Laugh-In Theater, features Miranda Berthold and Andy watching Men in Black. A lot of talk about wearing an Egger suit. An Egger suit. It's a suit. An Egger suit. The Hard Traveling Fanboys kick off X-Men month with an edition of Countdown in which they provide their complete 11-to-1 rankings of the X-Men cinematic universe. Good God, 11 of those movies, huh? Pop Goes to the Movies with Scott Criscolo and J. Arsenio's John Bell Pitt, Rocket Man. The NBA Team podcast is back with Gone Fishin' Part 3, where Adam and Andrew stay in the East, and then in part 4, delve into the basement of the Eastern Conference. Sunday Groove is back with host David Sunday, talking songs by Elton John and Chris Cornell. Be sure to keep an eye out on our social media feeds as the reboot of the greatest song of the 1980s tournament is starting soon. Over on the PTBN Wrestling feed, lots of new things going up. Let's see what we have here. A new Wrestling War Zone with JT and Chad as they dive into Raw and Nitro from 1/15/1996. Making Towns with Friends number 3 features Steve Williams recounting his experiences training in Ohio Valley Wrestling. After a 6-month hiatus, Steve Bennett and Peter Winston? I thought it was Winston. Reunite to discuss their 10 favorite single season sports teams of all time. That doesn't seem right. Oh well. On the Adams Division podcast, in the 8th episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zanny continues his road trip diaries in an interview with Mikey Blanton to discuss Black Label Pro Wrestling. Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey recap Super Showdown and NJPW Classic Match Picks on the newest episode of Main Event. On PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 kicks off with a commentary on the Best Picture nominees for the 66th Academy Awards and continues with a piece on the 1994 World Cup. Check out our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE PPV and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. Thank you very much. And now back to the show.
So that was another long one. General thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was like that looked like a hybrid between the earlier matches we watched of like what I would just say is like more traditional wrestling.
Yeah.
But then they did do like the showman stuff, like the WWF type stuff.
Yeah.
Especially Ric Flair. I mean, he was working the crowd a little bit and he was like he seemed to like play to things more, and then that ref was like up in the mix pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a hybrid between all that stuff.
Yeah.
This was kind of what I got. But, I mean, the energy was like, impressive. And like I had remarked through the match, you could tell that they had good chemistry, I guess you'd call it.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you liked it?
Yeah, I liked it.
I think that I can probably combine those two questions. General thoughts and did you like the match?
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, no, I like them as separate questions.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I think I can separate
the
two.
Okay. What was the story that you felt was being conveyed?
Well, it seemed like there was an intense rivalry, and the Ric Flair character was, I mean, he felt like the bad guy, but it was more like, it felt like he was just trying to like prove like he deserves a belt,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So it just felt like an intense more of like a story rivalry.
Okay.
I didn't feel like, oh, this guy's really good or this guy's really bad.
Yeah.
As much.
Okay. Can you see why this match is considered to be one of the greatest of all time?
I could probably get there. I mean, it was like really, I mean, for being an hour long, the way that they worked each other and the crowd, it felt like, I mean, what they were doing was like very impressive,
mm-hmm.
on a non-wrestling level. Just as someone, you know, someone watching two guys like being that physical together, and again following the traditional form, but it felt like it was a little more dramatic and I don't know, modern, like what I would look like, what I think of wrestling as now.
Yeah,
it felt like kind of a like a crossroads, like okay. a, you know, coming into that.
Yeah. And last question, so rank this one with the others. So right now, Magnum Tully 1, Bach versus Hennig is number 2, New Japan is 3, Sangre Chicana MS1 is 4, Macho Man versus Steamboat is 5. Where would you put this one?
Remind me, can you give me a couple of telltales about the Bach versus Hennig one?
So that was old man Nick Bockwinkel versus the young gun, Kurt Hennig.
No, that was
60-minute draw.
Yeah. So I'm really comparing it to that one.
Right.
This was better than that.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
So
you would have, let's see, Magnum Tully 1, this one 2.
Yeah.
Bach Hennig 3, New Japan 4, Sangre Chicana 5, and Macho Man Steamboat 6.
Yeah. Based on kind of our criteria last time of like, you know, what I think what I should be looking for as like a wrestling match.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so
because I mean, I'm not trying to knock the Steamboat guy like putting the other one down at the bottom, but this didn't feel as like phoned in.
Yeah,
you know, as that one.
Yeah,
it was just like pretty gritty, like they were going at it. But I mean, again, it was also like pretty showy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there wasn't really blood in this one, right?
No.
And kind of that, the guy begging and the. You know, the working of the crowd like that.
Yeah.
But in like a, it was a lot more tasteful.
Yeah. So, yeah. So this is a match. This is generally considered to be the best, match like in U.S. wrestling history. A lot of people consider that. And like the people that write the newsletters, you know, at the time were like really high on the, you know, they thought mm-hmm. this is like the best thing of all time, you know? And a lot of people still feel that way. I think, in my opinion, this is the best singles match of all time. Anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
I still like the Magnum versus Tully match better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is one of the best singles match. Like, I think there's an argument that the Magnum Tully match is the best singles match of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But this... with like how epic it is in the scope, it's a big title match. The fact that they work so hard and so fast the whole time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, because a lot of times if there's a match that is really fast paced, what you get is you lose some of the storytelling elements.
Definitely.
Or like the selling of the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And things don't breathe.
Right.
But somehow they're able to make it, everything really breathe and have space and gravity to it, but they're also moving really fast and working really hard.
Right. There wasn't a lot of like lag.
Right. Yeah.
It was pretty well paced.
Yeah. So like the mini stories that they were telling, like the kind of feeling each other out in the first fall and Ric Flair getting the flash win and Steamboat getting really intense and like working on Ric Flair's back.
Mm-hmm.
And using that, like all the everything that they did during the match played into the finishes of the match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the third one, like Ric Flair kind of starting to lose his mind and
mm-hmm.
Steamboat's leg buckling from underneath him, that leading into the finish of the match, the finish leading into the next match, like, you know, being ambiguous so it allows for another match to happen, like it did its job in that way.
True, yeah.
Like,
yeah, it seemed like, especially when I compare it to that other hour-long singles one, the Bach, right?
Yes, Bach-Winkle. Uh-huh.
That one was also, like, really intense, and it had a lot of, like, energy.
Yeah.
So in that way they're very similar, but like this one I felt had the appropriate, everything just felt like it locked in where it should have.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
you said, like they coordinated in a way they like how they did the moves when, or like like I could even tell that when he did that figure four or whatever, that was significant.
Yeah.
When he did it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was like the it just seemed like the planning or not, however it happened, it just seemed like the timing was really right.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. So like a criticism that this match receives, and I think part of it is fair, is like the setting and the moments and everything. So this is a free TV match.
Mm-hmm.
On TV in the middle of, it's on kind of a throwaway show in the Superdome that's largely empty.
Yeah.
Do you think that plays into the quality of the match at all for you?
For me, like, excuse me. For me, it like enhances it.
Okay.
Because yeah. I want to see a spectacle and it just makes it that much more bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, and they spell the guy's name wrong, and the can lights and, like, the cords are all over the place.
Yeah.
There's not that many people there, but they're really kind of rowdy.
Yeah.
And then the guys are just going at it. I mean, that like, made it more
yeah.
impressive.
Yeah.
And you also maybe think that they're just, like, they've got their own pride and
yeah.
a unity as, like, seasoned wrestlers that have
yeah.
done this before with each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
To make, okay, we're going to make this match happen and
yeah.
like, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like the more bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do too.
Yeah. Of course you do too. And that's something I can actually latch onto a little bit
yeah.
more.
Yeah. All right. Good. I think that's, I think that's all we have. I liked that we watched two Steamboat matches, you know, in order
mm-hmm.
from one another. I think that worked out well.
So, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I believe that's all we've got. Jordan, do you want to talk about your child at all?
No, thank you.
No, do you want to describe what he looks like no, for the folks at home in case they ever see him?
No, that's okay.
Okay. Any plugs?
No.
Social media plugs, Jordan?
No, thank you.
Well, you can follow me if you like on Twitter at @_burningspirits. You can get in touch there. And we will be back next time with another match.
Sounds good.
All right. Bye.
Bye.